Hello, friends, and welcome to the Healing Ground Movement. Now, for more content and bonus features, you can join us on Facebook and Instagram. And remember, all of our content is delivered freely, so please consider supporting the show by donating via the link on our website at healinggroundmovement.com or liking and reviewing the podcast on your favorite platform.
Enjoy today's episode.
Hey, everyone. Today's episode is brought to you by ButcherBox. ButcherBox partners with people who are dedicated to doing the right thing, never cutting corners and always looking for ways to improve. Discover why they're the trusted source of high-quality protein for families across the country. At ButcherBox, they believe in better. For them, that means caring about their animals and the planet, treating our planet with respect. It means improving the lives of animals and the livelihoods of farmers, and ultimately, it means better meals enjoyed together. The protein from ButcherBox is never given antibiotics or added hormones. It's humanely raised. Our family loves the convenience and quality and knowing that we are getting humanely raised and sustainably harvest protein. You can customize your box with the right amount of food and variety of meat to fit your family's individual needs. If you're interested in getting a special offer, go ahead and head to healinggroundmovement.com/resources to follow the link for ButcherBox. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. I am your host, Dr. Carly Hudson. And with us today, we have April Porter. Now, April and I had a really awesome getting to know you conversation months and months ago, diving into this whole arena of emotions and parent-child connection as it relates to how we recognize and own our own emotions and help our children to do the same thing, which is a topic near and dear to my heart as I am trying to raise a little one to figure that out and raise myself to figure it out too. So to get to know April a little bit more, she is a human design life coach who helps people stop living at the edge of burnout by helping them reconnect with their authentic selves. She is also passionate about helping parents raise their children to stay connected to their true authentic selves so they don't have to grow up and have a health or life crisis to remember the truth of who they really are. And doesn't that just seem like the way that we do things now is that it has become so culturally ubiquitous to say, we just need to hit rock bottom to decide what's important to us. What if that wasn't the cultural given and we got to do something a little bit more sustainable? So April, thank you so much for joining us on the show. So happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So this is a really unique and potent area of study that you've gotten into. What brought you to this kind of work?
Oh my goodness. It's been a journey for sure. I started in nutrition with a child who had food sensitivities, and then that led me to a career. Mm-hmm. And then that led me to feeling like there was a missing piece in the work I was doing and wanting more of the mindset support around the coaching piece. And mm-hmm. so I went back to school to become a life coach. And somewhere in the middle of all of this, human design kind of found me. And it had been pulling me back in consistently. I'd take a little bit and then I'd go back for more. And I just kind of blended the two. It became something that I was talking about more and more with my clients, and they were interested in it and providing so much insight to them to help them decondition, to help them reconnect to their true authentic selves, that it just kind of morphed into, this is where I'm at now.
Yeah, I love that. And can you tell us a little bit more in a nutshell, what is human design? What's this foundation that we're going to be drawing from in our conversation?
Yeah. So human design is based on these ancient and modern sciences and wisdoms like the I Ching, the Kabbalah, the chakra system, astrology, and quantum physics. And it's not any one of them in their entirety, but it's a blend of them. And the way that they are overlapped, it gives us a window into the energy blueprint that we come into this life with. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a user manual. Right? Like if we ever got a user manual, I think human design is it. It's the thing that tells us when we are operating out of alignment so that we can recognize and course correct.
Mm-hmm. And this is the sort of thing, you know, I love how you said modern and ancient, because you know, as we talk about these disciplines, we talk about these resources, it is, I find us coming back around to the ancient wisdom, things that we have always sort of looked for and known, these themes that follow us everywhere. And I think as individuals that we end up sort of getting into our own paths, our own themes, where we keep repeating similar lessons or similar similar callings. And in its own way, would you say that we're sort of finding our blueprint, but having to stumble into it?
Yes, exactly. And we can spend our whole lives stumbling around trying to figure out where the borders are, mm-hmm. where we're supposed to be operating. Or we can look at a tool like human design and shorten that learning curve.
And so, you know, I think a lot of our listeners are really familiar with, you know, other ways of knowing blueprints. I mean, we have things like Myers-Briggs, we have things like even, you know, what's your astrology sign? What are the blueprints that we sort of turn to in human design?
Well, first of all, I want to say there's something a little bit different about human design from something like Myers-Briggs or the Enneagram, because those are personality typing where we are assessing ourselves. And when we are assessing ourselves, we can be operating out of this in human design. We call it the not self. It's mm-hmm. the misaligned or unaligned self. And so we can think that we are something that we're not, where human design gives us this blueprint that says, this is how your energy is designed to work in the world. Some people are designed to initiate and start things. Some people are, a lot of people, most people, like 70% of people, are designed to respond to what life brings them. So we have this idea that we're supposed to go out and make things happen when the majority of people are supposed to kind of sit back and say, hey, life, what do you have for me? And then respond to it.
And even just with that very simple observation, we can see how much discord we can create in our own lives, thinking that we are supposed to be out there being the initiator and constantly failing ourselves for not doing something that isn't in our nature.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we're fighting this all the time. And then, you know, there's people like, I'm a projector, and projectors are here to guide. We're not here to do the work like the generator types in human design are, which is the 70%. You know, we have the initiators, and they are like 9% of the population. And we have this really magical 1% of the population that are reflectors, that are kind of our barometer for telling us how things are going. Mm-hmm. They reflect back to us how well we're doing. So everybody has a part to play. And this is like the basic foundation of human design. It's like, what is your energy type and how is it supposed to interact in the world? And then everybody gets a strategy for interacting and an inner authority that helps them guidance to make their own decisions. It's that inner compass.
Well, and then you get to come to that place of authenticity, which, you know, as we were sort of talking about in your introduction there, is that you find out when we have these journeys to authenticity. And I think there's a lot of that personal investigation that's been happening over the last few years as everyone's world got turned upside down. It really provided this question of, who am I in the absence of everything that I thought I knew? Who am I in the face of a crisis? So we all just face this trauma that you talked about in your bio. But when we're in that search of authenticity, really what we're looking for is, what's that value set? What is my guiding light so that I can stop being anyone but myself?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so how does that then dovetail itself into this conversation about emotions and holding your emotions so that you know where your container is and where your kid's container is and your partner and your bosses and whoever else you might encounter in the world?
Right. So as a parent, we deal with emotions all the time, right? Mm-hmm. We have children with meltdowns. We have reactions. We have teenagers that are very moody. We have all kinds of emotions that we're dealing with. And we can take those very personally as a parent, because the words hurt, right? Like, they can say things that are very hurtful. But when we take the emotional piece out of it, which is what human design allows us to do, it allows us to look at the emotions from a different perspective and not make them so personal. Mm-hmm. Then we can separate the emotion behind the words and figure out, what does our child actually need?
And so tell us a little bit more about that, separating that personal aspect, because I think that starts to feel a little bit contrary to a lot of the ways that we imagine emotions in our world. You know, we have the way I interact with your emotions, the way that your emotions influence me. Is this not just the currency of our interaction? Sounds like we're saying it's a little bit different.
Yes. So in human design, there's if we really boil it down to the basics, there are two different types of emotional people in the world. There are people who create emotional waves. They have a emotional wave that is consistent within them, and it rises and falls on its own pattern. Mm-hmm. Then we have people who are the true emotional empaths of the world that do not create their own wave, but they absorb the waves from other people. those people take in the emotions of others, amplify them, and can send them back out into the world. And they can look like the most emotional people around, because these people are not meant to hold emotions in the same way that somebody who creates the emotions does. Mm-hmm. And not to say that people that are emotional empaths don't have emotions. It's just that they don't consistently emit a emotional wave to other people. So it has to be in response to something that is in their environment or the people around them.
Gotcha. Which really does start to talk a lot about the way we see empaths, which, you know, the word that I got thrown at me a whole lot was just so sensitive. And it's like, well, yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff going around here. What am I supposed to do but not feel that and really understand what's going on there? So why do we have those two types? You know, what's kind of that purpose of having someone who emits and someone who reflects?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at human design charts, they're all different. No two are going to ever be alike, but there are some consistencies. And so if we look at the place in the chart where we find emotions, about 50% of us are the wave makers and 50% are the feelers of those waves, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so we all play a part. We have the people who are here to create the emotions, to have this big emotional wave. We have the moody artist, you know, that's one archetype that we can look at. We have the people who build their emotional response through expectations, whether they're real or perceived. They have these expectations that things are going to be a certain way. And if they aren't, then they crash down after that. Mm-hmm. We have this tribal element of, I have to support my tribe. And there's this defensive piece that comes in where it's like, I want to protect, you know, so we have that. And then we also have the people who are the empaths, and they are the ones who can become really, really wise to all of the emotional energy that's out there, because they don't have one consistent way of feeling it. They can feel a variety of things from anybody around them.
And so in that way, it's sort of like you can have all of these different impetus, all these different starters, because if you think about there's the moody archetype, the moody artist archetype is in this place of creation and searching and longing. And that helps with an inquisition into what yes. could be different. And if you have the expectation archetype, well, that's the energy that throws us forward into something. You have to have that urgency towards an expectation, or it can forever remain just on the horizon. And then exactly. having that other half of the population be able to weave all of these pieces together, you know, it creates more of a tapestry of a story rather than something so discordant as this over here, that over there, and kind of whack-a-mole emotions maybe.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. We all have a part to play.
Well, I love that about this way of looking at it, because, you know, it starts to bring us to this neutral place around emotions and this neutral place around being. And I think this is something that's starting to get pulled apart, you know, certainly in psychology and interpersonal work, is that emotions themselves do not hold a positive or negative. You know, they are neutral. They are at their very heart, a quick chemical reaction of observation. And it's the story that we attach to them that makes them last longer, spin into a story, and become positive or negative. And in that way, we can also attribute to ourselves positive or negative emotional tags and roles within a system, within a family system. So I see all of this coming together in that parent-child interaction.
Yes, yes, exactly. And so if we take that child who, you know, we have a mom, for example, who is at home with her kids all day, have little children hanging off of her all day, and mm-hmm. she's expecting a break at the end of the day. Her spouse gets home and she expects that break. She doesn't get it. And then it's just one more mommy, 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 too many. And she explodes. Mm-hmm. And that's the way her wave works, you know, is to explode so that she can get that moment to have that break. And unfortunately, if she hasn't recognized it before, then it does have to explode so that she can get that. But we can learn to recognize these patterns in ourselves and anticipate what are our needs and how can we best support them so that we don't have to explode at our children, or our children don't have to explode at us. We can help mitigate that. And not to say that that wave shouldn't ever reach that peak, because there's a purpose in that, but how can we responsibly manage that?
Well, and in that way, we really do get to learn what is the emotion asking for? What is the ask behind the expression? And certainly we see that a lot with kiddos because they also don't have as dynamic or wide of a language to express their needs. You know, definitely down when we start tagging the terrible twos, you've got crying or not crying, babbling or not babbling. And it starts to become more nuanced as we ask for our needs. But what if we don't have that education to really broaden and impress upon us a nuanced language to ask? We're really left with these knee-jerk emotions, still just trying to get a need met.
Yes. Now imagine if you have a blueprint for your child that says, okay, this is the type of emotional wave that they have. This is what it needs to feel secure, to feel stable. This is when they need time alone. You can start to recognize those patterns in your child and give them more of what they need instead of asking your child, what's wrong? What are you feeling? Why do you feel that way? Because then we start to, like you said, attach a story to why we feel a certain way and we get stuck in that pattern, or we get stuck in identifying ourselves or our children as a sad or depressed or angry or happy or, you know, whatever emotion it is that you see from that child most of the time. And we can look at happy just the same way as we can look at sad. If we start labeling somebody as they're a happy person all the time, that's a big expectation to try and fulfill constantly.
Yeah, because we all need to exist within this gray area of not always having to be at our best, being perfect all the time. It's too much pressure to not be able to make mistakes, not be able to falter and ask for help. But certainly it is easier to say you are this type of person without very much variation.
Right.
So when we have, we talked about how these emotions are not personal attacks, but this starts to get into what I think is a really interesting tightrope that I hope that you can help illuminate for us, is that when we talk about owning your emotions, so, you know, you have these feelings, you have these impulses, but to do that without identifying with them, decoupling from being the depressed person, the sad person, the happy person, the perfect person, what does that really even mean?
Well, I think when you, if you learn a little bit more about human design and those specific waves, it will tell you more about each of those patterns. So if we look at that moody artist archetype, right? So we have a wave that is pretty even keel most of the time, and it will have sudden spikes up and sudden spikes down. Mm-hmm. This person doesn't typically stay in those spikes very long, but they can be very extreme. So this is where you have maybe a child who is going along perfectly fine. And then all of a sudden out of the blue, they're really, really sad and depressed appearing. They just need time alone. They want to be left alone. They just want to tell you to go away. Mm-hmm. And we can start looking at, well, what happened? Did something at school happen? Did somebody bother them? Are they being bullied? Or, you know, we could go through all of those things that a parent goes through and look for where is the problem. But if we know that this is just how that child is meant to experience emotions, we can ask them different questions. We can say, where are you in your wave today? Mm-hmm. Are you in a low part of your wave? And, you know, this is different for different age groups. There's different ways we can talk about this. But if we can start opening that conversation earlier and earlier, and they can start to understand, oh, this is just a wave that I feel, and it goes like this, or it goes like this sometimes, you know, we can normalize that it's okay to be in the low part of the wave, just like it's okay to be in the high part of the wave or in the middle where we feel pretty neutral.
Yeah. And this makes me think of, you know, colloquial ways that we talk about this is like, oh, they're quick to boil. They're a slow starter. You know, we have ways that we have observed this culturally in the past, whether, you know, someone loses their temper quickly or they're just going to seethe quietly across the bottom line here. We do make room for this kind of space, but I don't think, you know, and until I heard of human design, I'd never really heard of looking at this as a pattern and seeing something predictable, you know, that someone is quick to an emotional change is kind of always going to be that way. And that's okay. It lets us know where is this emotional change coming from without pathologizing it in some way.
Yes. Yes. And the other side of this is all of our emotional empaths. You know, we can have a room full of emotional empaths, and if nothing is really happening, it can be cool, calm, and collected. Everybody's happy to just coexist and read their books or whatever they're doing. But we put somebody who has an emotional wave, we let them walk through that room. They don't have to say anything. And just because their aura admits this wave, this emotional frequency, it can start fighting within everybody in that room. It can start bickering or picking at, or, you know, just different emotions will come out.
Well, and again, I think this is something that we can kind of see, that you see patterns in your day. You see that kind of feeling of what permeates around the room. I feel like this is something that I've heard from my teachers often, is that the way, you know, a kid can come in and be the one that sort of starts the wave throughout the morning. And that is going to be the tone and rhythm of the day, and how it is that we all pick up on each other's interactions that way.
Yes. And so now imagine if that child or the teacher or the parent knows this is a child who has this emotional wave. They are going to affect other people when they're around, not because necessarily that they're doing anything, but just because mm-hmm. it's part of their chemical makeup. Mm-hmm. If they know that, then the teacher or the parent or whoever is around can use different tools to help lessen that experience. So you can get them all up moving that energy through their bodies, and it will dissipate. And then the bickering and whatever else is going on will simmer down.
Well, and I like that this then brings in the whole body experience. I think too long that we've really sat in this place where, you know, emotions belong in the head and the heart. Maybe we get down to some gut intuition, but it's very separate from our physical self. And if we think about what we are at the very base, our bodies are vibrating balls of energy. Our emotions that go through us are our chemical pulses that are waves of energy. We emit electronic energy field that goes 6 feet out in all directions from us. We are energy. And to sit quietly with our hands clasped in a buzzing ball of, I don't know what just walked past me, what do I do with this? Mm-hmm. That's asking for a whole different kind of self-control than if, you know, something's rattling around inside of you and you decide to roll and rattle around with it.
Exactly.
So what are some other ways that looking at interactions is different in this lens than it would be from some of the more traditional models?
With emotion specifically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good question. I think it's interesting that we can look at it through this lens and look at our children. If we have, say, four children and one of them has an emotional wave and three of them don't, you know, when that one child comes home, we can see how that can affect the others.
Hmm.
Then we can parent differently, right? We know that this child needs time alone, maybe. And maybe the children who do not have the emotional wave, they need time alone because they need to get away from that wave for a while. So it's not just singling out the person with the wave. Like, it's okay to have a wave. It's okay not to have a wave. Knowing what you have and what you're working with is really the important part. Once mm-hmm. we understand that and which waves they are and what they need, then we can be a better parent, and we can recognize in ourselves what we need. So maybe we are the emotional empaths and our children have all these emotional waves. That's a lot to be around all day. You got to know how to take care of yourself so that you can show up and be that best parent that you want to be.
Oh, I love that. And I'm so grateful that you came back in and said that it's not that any one thing is the problem child, is the one to be pathologized, that every single expression is in its own way neutral and normal for that individual. It's sort of just learning how to coordinate the dance within your own, you know, household community, school community, work community, however you see fit. Mm-hmm. So how many different waves are there to take into consideration?
There's actually four. And you can have one, two, three, or four of them possible in your chart. Most people have one or two if they have them. But I have seen people with four waves before. And so that gets a little tricky because you're tracking multiple different waves. And it's a little trickier to see what's coming and which needs are needing to be met. But one of them is pretty even keel. It doesn't have much rise to it unless somebody or something threatens somebody in their tribe, right? Mm-hmm. So if say a mother and child are walking across the street and there's a car coming, there's going to have a big reaction. And maybe she yells at the car, at the driver, mm-hmm. right? Because this is my baby. Yeah. Don't hurt my baby. And then as soon as that passes, she goes back to even normal again, right? Mm-hmm. Then we have one that's more of a ratcheting wave. It's like one annoying thing at a time happens and you're like, okay, that's kind of annoying, but all right, next thing. Oh, that's a little more annoying. That's a little more annoying. And then somebody loads the dishwasher incorrectly and you explode, right? Like it's not the one thing that pushes you over the edge. It's the culmination of one more thing, one more thing, one more thing. And usually that one is because we have a need that is not being met. And oftentimes it's because we're not speaking what that need is. We're expecting other people to read our mind and know what we need. We need the break. We need you to load the dishwasher the way that I asked you to before. You know, it's like whatever that thing is, there's mm-hmm. something that's not being met. And usually it's because that need is not being spoken. So if we can learn to speak what that need is, we can have that met and not have to ratchet up in that wave.
And I think it's really interesting to then look into, you know, as we have these different waves, perhaps then there is an understanding about also speaking that need so it can be heard. Because I know that there's a lot of that, well, I thought I asked for it, but clearly I didn't. And, you know, that's where so much of that discordance can come from as well.
Mm-hmm. And we can see this wave also in children where it doesn't have to reach explosion to reset, but it can reach clarity and reset. Mm-hmm. So this can be in a child who's, you know, experiencing difficulty with a math problem and they're working at it and they're working at it and they're getting frustrated. And then all of a sudden they have that aha moment where it comes together mm-hmm. and you see all this frustration build and then it's just gone.
Yep.
Because the clarity reset it. It brought it right back down.
Oh, fantastic. I like that there's different ways to release within that as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. And I'm kind of curious then for the first wave that you talked about, that explosive wave, to me, that also feels like it could have a eureka moment in that way as well. Or does that not apply there?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the clarity, right? Like, aha, I figured it out.
But with the first explosive wave where something really big and threatening comes at you, but maybe there's this eureka solution instead of an explosive outburst, or is that not applied here?
I think that's more like the second wave. So the first one is more of that, like protecting, mm-hmm. like I'm going to lift a car off of somebody because I have to protect you.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Now I see there. Okay, great. So then what is the third wave type?
So the third one is that moody artist archetype, right? Mm-hmm. So the even keel, sudden spikes up or sudden spikes down. So this one's a little harder to predict because it feels a little more random. And this is one where you're going to see melancholy. It's going to be that low melancholy. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to go sleep all day long.
Yeah.
Or it's that writing that really high, but it's short. It's usually really short term. So if we can give people what they need in that wave, which is usually time alone, mm-hmm. Giving and with kids, offering them a creative outlet, because all of that melancholy, all of those feelings that are there, if we can release them through art, there's some pretty magical stuff that could come out, whether it's painting or music or singing or whatever it is that makes them feel good.
And it's amazing. I was just listening to another podcast this morning talking about sort of having that low space, that melancholy boredom space, that is really the gateway to creation.
Yes.
So often we see that as a seeking, you know, we're seeking information, we're seeking something, and we have started putting something like a screen or an already made media product in front of that seeking so that that creative outlet gets stopped at what has already been made, rather than leaning into the empty space of boredom until that expression can come through.
Yes.
Like just wait that little bit longer, hold out a little bit longer.
Yes, that boredom is where we come up with those great ideas. This is where mutative energy lives. It's what creates new things in the world. It changes our perspective and our perception of the way that people feel and the way that they see things.
Oh, that's beautiful. And we certainly need a lot of that these days.
Yes.
That's wonderful. Okay. And so then the fourth wave type is?
The fourth wave type is one that rises through those expectations. So this is a little more like a slow moving escalator. It goes up and up and up and up and up and up on expectations. And then if those expectations aren't met, it can crash and it can be really low. So this is where you'll have a child who will say something like, I don't know why I even bother. I should just quit. I'm never going to get this. You don't want me to do this. I should never get my hopes up. You know, it's those kind of like they had an expectation and it wasn't met. And now they're really sad about it.
Mm-hmm. And so having that rise, does that always come through just a one event thing? Is that the rhythm piece, or is it just whatever expectation they might be picking up throughout their day until there's too many of them not being met?
It could be either. So it's really important to kind of understand which wave you have and then track it. So track each day, like, where do I feel in my wave? Am I waking up feeling like on a scale of negative 10 to 10, you know, where am I in that wave with zero being neutral? And then tracking that over time. So, you know, the escalator one is a little easier to see that rise and then the drop. But it really just depends on what's going on in their life and what those expectations are. And also what, as a parent, are we leading them to believe? If we say, hey, we should go to Disneyland sometime. Mm-hmm. A child may hear that as, we're going to Disneyland, right? So now we have this expectation of, we're going to go. And if you say, oh no, I was just throwing out an idea, that's when they crash. Mm. And then it's, you said we were going to go.
Well, and I think that that's a really common interaction of like, where did we end up in this conversation? So understanding, you know, where your kid is riding on the wave, that if they are more attached to expectations, it certainly gives us an opportunity to be more careful with our language. Yes. To so that a we should do this doesn't turn into a you said yes, and then the argument is, well, no, I never did, and yes, you did, and now nobody's winning and everybody's yelling, you know, instead of just sort of appreciating where your child is on that attachment.
Exactly.
So it does feel like if you are, you know, a true emotional empath, it would be very difficult to understand if that is the role that you play when, as you said, you could have one or two or all four of these emotions bouncing around inside of you. How do you discern whether you have multiple waves or if you are the empath reflecting multiple waves?
So you need to get a copy of your human design chart, which is based on your birth date, time, and place. If you know those things, you can pull a chart for free. Geneticmatrix.com, you can just run it for free. There's other sites out there. But you would look for the emotional solar plexus, and it will tell you if it's colored in, it's defined, and you have a wave. And then there are different channels that come out of there that will show you which specific wave. I have information on my website that you can look up and find out what those waves are. But knowing that you have it, then you look at which wave you have, and then you start to learn about that wave. If you're an emotional empath, though, I do recommend learning about all the waves, because you're going to feel them all the time from the people you're around. And the important thing for that emotional empath to know is that you are not the source of those things. And what I see often is that people who have this center open and are those emotional empaths turn that on themselves and they go, what did I do wrong? Why am I feeling so sad? Why do I feel like I did the wrong thing? And they want to avoid confrontation because it feels bad, right? Like, there's so many things that they're feeling from people, and then they start questioning themselves. And so the biggest thing I can say is that those are not yours most of the time. What those things that you're feeling are not yours, unless it is in direct response to something that happened to you or someone you know, or it's something that you are directly experiencing. If you walk into a room and you're feeling like, oh, it feels really like, I feel really irritated and irritable in here. Mm-hmm. Probably not you. Probably leave the room 5 minutes and you'll feel differently.
And that is really amazing to have another lens and another way to look at this, instead of having almost what turns into a personal gaslighting of, what happened that made me so irritated? Something must have. Where did it go? And then backwriting, rewriting an experience to match what you're picking up in an irritated room.
Yes. So for either side of this, we have been trying to identify what is the thing that made us feel this way. We just feel these things. And that's the biggest thing I can say, is that human design allows us to just feel without attaching the story to it.
And I think, isn't that the goal that we're all trying to move towards, is to be in that moment, be present, and be able to move through it to the next moment without taking that baggage with you, if you can.
Exactly. Exactly.
April, this has been a fantastic and illuminating conversation. I think there is so much to gain from really understanding and feeling your own rhythms and your own pace within the world, or knowing if where you're at is in that reflective place. Either way, we really get to stand more in that space of value and authenticity as you're moving forward. So I love this matrix of the human design. And so now you have actually offered very generously to share a copy of your new book with our audience. We're going to do another book giveaway on Instagram, thanks to April Porter here. Can you tell us a little bit about what your book is set to teach and illuminate around human design for our listeners?
Yeah. So my book is Parenting the Child You Have, and it is through the lens of human design, looking at parenting and how we are parenting our children. So really giving us the option to step back and say, who is this child? Not who do I want them to be, or who do I expect them to be, or are they just like me? Because they are going to be different. And so it gives us that lens to look at them and see them as individuals and look at what are their needs and how can I meet their needs? And also, how can I meet my own needs? Because this isn't just about, you know, putting yourself last. This is about putting everybody first and getting everybody's needs met in a way that makes sense.
Finding the daily rhythm that suits the whole family.
Yes. And stepping out of those boxes that we tend to put ourselves in of, well, we have to have a meal at 5 o'clock every day with the family. Everybody has to be together. And that doesn't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. So it allows you to look at what else is possible.
Oh, I love that. And it does. When we start to look at that individual need, we can step away from the shoulds and really find that rhythm that includes everybody to be their best selves.
Yes.
Yeah. This reminds me of some of the best parenting advice that I got from my dad before I was even ever, you know, ready to become a parent. But he was just saying that the way he thought of it is that you have to know where your shit begins and where your shit ends and theirs begins, and not confuse the two. And that feels like a lot of what we've been talking about today is simply knowing, you know, where is your container? Where's your kid's container? And let's not muddy the lines between them.
Absolutely. And that's what human design has given me in my parenting. It's given my clients, and it's so rewarding when you get that moment and you're like, oh my gosh, I've been pushing so hard against this thing that I shouldn't have been. And when you stop, there's so much more energy and freedom and movement and ability to connect when you remove those barriers.
That's beautiful. And not to put you too much on the spot here, but I wonder if you have like the most revolutionary thing that shifted for you and your family that you just thought was a given that opened up for you.
Honestly, I think that the emotional piece was the biggest shift for me, because I have one child who is emotionally defined and one who is not. And she has a very open chart, which means she's very sensitive to other people's emotions and everything else that they feel and who they are and everything. But when I saw that, I went, oh my gosh, this child who is so emotionally reactive is not the most emotional one in the house. And it allowed me to say, oh my gosh, she doesn't need more support around how to manage those emotions. She needs support around how to let go of those emotions, because those are not hers.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I think that really resonates, because I wonder how many people do get tagged as that being the most emotional one in the house. And there's just a can't put your finger on it, but that's not right. That's not where you're actually experiencing things. And this would be a really great model to look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thing. Awesome. Well, April, where can any of our listeners find you and learn more about your work?
So the best place to find me is my website, which is aprilporter.com. I am very sporadically on Instagram and Facebook. As a projector, I kind of dive in and out when it feels good. but email and my website are the best way to find me.
Beautiful. And we will have all of that in the show notes. Look for that Instagram post on Healing Ground Movement to find your opportunity to win your very own book of Parenting the Child You Have from April. We will post that the same week this episode goes live and then announce the winner, as we are accustomed to do. I am so excited. I have my own copy that I get to dive into and look through, looking at my little family unit as well. So I hope that you all got a little something out of this episode. Thank you, April, so much for coming and really drawing out the detail of human design in a whole nother way to look at and appreciate who we are and how we exist in the world.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
And to all of our listeners, I really hope that you take away a little something from this episode. As always, for me, it's looking at this idea of owning your emotions without identifying them, really being in that moment and not holding on to the shoulds or the ought tos or the labels that we've so often prescribed to emotions, and taking a look at where those rhythms fall in our daily lives to give yourself a little bit more grace and a little bit more ease in how you navigate your world. I look forward to seeing you next week for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. In the meantime, be well.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it to help you on your journey to health. Please, if you're inclined, share this podcast with a friend so we can help more people lead healthier lives. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help. And we'll see you next week for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. Be well.